All right, final hour of the program. And Tyler, the hype train for Gardner Minshew rolls on. Because they were down by quite a bit. It was like 17-3 at one point. And Gardner Minshew has rolled on, and they are now leading, I think, 20-17, Jacksonville Jags. So I don't necessarily think this is an indication of how good Gardner Minshew is. It's just really how bad Joe Flacco is. But it still is impressive. I mean, you come back, and Joe Torty brought up a phenomenal point. He came in last week and goes, I don't understand how you have all the scouting, right? You literally pay guys a large amount of money to do nothing but watch football. Look for tendencies. Can this guy play? Can this not? Can he not? Should we draft him in the fourth round? Can we wait till the fifth? Should we trade up? Should we not? Is he an NFL player? Is he not? And the Eagles decided that Gardner Minshew, you don't need him. No. Let's go get the kid from Northwestern. Let's go get that guy. He ends up getting released. He looked terrible in training camp, gets released. He's on, I think, the Cardinals practice squad, I want to say.
I think he's with the Cowboys.
Is he with the Cowboys?
I think so.
I thought he was with the Cardinals. Whoever practice squad he's with, it's not the Eagles. And Gardner Minshew is balling hard. Now, the case to be made, Gardner Minshew didn't play as many games in college as, I'm even drawing a blank on his name, the kid from Northwestern.
Clayton Thorson.
Clayton Thorson, thank you. What is up with quarterback names? Clayton Thorson, Gardner Minshew?
Easton Stick,
yeah. That's the guy I think they wanted, in all honesty.
Oh, it definitely is.
It's a lot like how the Eagles took Andre Dillard and they jumped the Houston Texans, and the very next pick, the Houston Texans took an offensive tackle.
Titus Howard,
yes, correct. So you're looking at, look, do the Eagles need a quarterback? No. Is it a situation where I'm banging the table going, my God, why don't we have Gardner Minshew right now? Absolutely not. But it's impressive of what he's been able to do, and he's kind of Wally Pipped Nick Foles. And they gave Nick Foles a lot of money, but how do you put Nick Foles back into the starting job if Gardner Minshew leads them back in this game? And he's looked pretty good doing it. So, I mean, it kind of reminds you a little bit of Matt Flynn. Matt Flynn got a ton of money from Seattle. Ton of money. After a few games, a few really good games with Green Bay, they paid him to be their franchise quarterback. But then it was some third-round pick named Russell, what's his name? Wilson, that was it, who ends up stealing the job. And then Matt Flynn ends up being the backup. I mean, Nick Foles has got to be sitting there with his, you know, broken collarbone being like, all right, so probably should have rented the house, not bought. We'll keep you updated, though, on all the games. The one team, though, that I have not gotten into, and I'd love to get Tyler's opinion on this, the Philadelphia 76ers. We haven't talked a lot about the Sixers. Hell, we've talked more Temple football than we talked about the Sixers. Although Temple with a huge win yesterday, beating Georgia Tech. I really wish the graduates of Temple would go. I really do. Not to get back to a Temple conversation, but it bugs me. I was driving home with my wife, and she actually went to Temple. I did not. And I was saying to her, like, you know, the alma mater of Temple University is so strong. I mean, like, and she goes, yeah, owls are everywhere. And I go, I know that. I go, nobody goes to games. Like, they need to go to the games, need to support the team. And I'm saying this because Georgia Tech, who's the youngest team in Division I, who's terrible, lost to the Citadel, their turnout was huge for yesterday's game. Huge. I mean, their fan base turned out. Georgia Tech, not a good team. And Temple struggles to get like 15,000 people, and yet I'm sure we all know multiple Temple University graduates. I just wish, man, that they would draw better. I don't know what the answer is. I don't know if it's an on-campus stadium. I don't know if it's getting into a bigger conference, a P5. I mean, that certainly hasn't really worked for Rutgers, but it would be nice. It'd be nice to like have the link packed, because I've been to games where the link is packed for like Temple, Penn State, albeit there's a lot of Penn State fans there. Temple, Notre Dame. Albeit there's a lot of Notre Dame fans there, but I've been there when the link is packed and it's an awesome atmosphere. And then you go to some of these games and it's kind of dead. I mean, and it's great because the Temple fans that are diehard Temple fans, I mean, they're hardcore and they're out there. But I just wish there were more because the alumni base is massive and they need to get out and they need to go to games. They need to support the team because the team is good. They've lost, they had a bad loss to Buffalo, but the team is good. And I'm looking forward to Thursday. But with that said, and we'll get off the Temple for now. But with the Sixers, man, the expectations are very high for this team. Tyler, what are your expectations, realistically, what are your expectations for this season?
My expectations are a 2 seed and at least an Eastern Conference Finals appearance. That's how good I think this team is, paired with the fact that I don't think there are any teams that are so much better than them that they should not be an Eastern Conference Finals appearance. I think the Bucks are a better regular season team than them, and you pair that with the fact that I think the Central Division is worse than the Atlantic Division, which should give the Bucks more regular season wins, which is why I think they're the 1 seed. But I don't think that there's a team in the East that you go, yep, Sixers don't match up well with them.
I agree. You know, I had a whole show a little bit after free agency opened about them possibly being a legitimate contender for an NBA championship. And my whole basis on this was, yes, are the Clippers a better team on paper? Absolutely. I don't think any basketball fan will tell you that the Los Angeles Clippers aren't a better matchup. But you can make a legitimate case for about 6 teams in the West to come out of the West. I mean, a legitimate case. That's how deep the West is. The East is completely wide open, and there's really only 3 good teams in it. And in reality, there's really only 2 good teams that you could really point to and say that's the upper echelon. I do expect the Boston Celtics to regain some form that they had. But with that said, I mean, this should be a 2-horse race between the Milwaukee Bucks and the Philadelphia 76ers. I love what Elton Brand did this offseason. Because, and Tyler, me and you had talked about it last season, there were so many games and so many times where we said, oh, we've never heard of you before? Well, your career high is about to happen against the Sixers. I mean, how many different players last season had their career highs against that team?
Because I mean, guys were getting contracts off of the games that they played against the Sixers.
Yeah, I mean, Caris LeVert needs to send Brett Brown and the coaching staff a fruit basket, like an edible arrangement.
Because well, not only him, but there was another
Spencer
net.
Dinwiddie.
It was Dinwiddie.
Yeah,
Spencer Dinwiddie got a contract like 48 hours after he dropped almost 40 on the Sixers.
Yeah, and look, good for good reason. But, I mean, Kemba dropped 60, I think, on them. Then he dropped 40 on them. It was defensively, they were a mess. Absolute mess. So he went out and said, okay, I could keep the team as is, status quo. I could see what happens when we have a quote-unquote full season with Jimmy Butler, which is kind of laughable because they got him in November. So they really did have a full season with Jimmy Butler, but he could have done that. He decided against it, and he decided to drastically change and give this team a complete facelift and say, okay, we are just flat out going to be better defensively than other teams. And you know what? In all honesty, looking at them, they pretty much are. Because when you look at the team, the only other team that I can think of that is a better defensive team than them is the Clippers, who could switch off and, you know, you have Pat Beverly on you and you switch off and now you have Kawhi on you and you switch off and you have Paul George on you. Like, they come at you in waves defensively. The Sixers are right up there, though. And you get a guy like Al Horford, that's going to do numbers. Or wonders, I'm sorry. I've got red zone on in front of me, so I'm looking at all these different numbers. It's going to do wonders for Joel Embiid. Because the one guy, the one big man that he really, really struggled against was Al Horford. Not only that, you hear so many great things about Al Horford being just an unbelievable teammate and a good guy in the locker room and a veteran who's been there before. And I think that's important. Because me and Devon have had this argument before. Devon was a staunch defender of everybody's favorite Philadelphia 76er, Amir Johnson. And I was a card-carrying member of the Amir Johnson hater club. I couldn't stand Amir Johnson, and that guy stole money from this team. And Devon would always say, look, man, he's a veteran presence. Now, my argument to that was, how can he be a veteran presence when you never play? Like, when Amir Johnson comes up to you and starts giving you pointers, if you're Joel Embiid, are you really listening? Are you really taking it all in? Because you got to be sitting there like, Dude, you're in street clothes.
Fundamentally, I think you do.
75% of the time you're in street clothes, though. Okay, who are you listening to more? Amir Johnson, who's in street clothes 80% of the time and is more focused on Twitter on the bench, or Al Horford?
Well, of course it's Al Horford.
Okay, that's my
point. But to say that Amir Johnson had no impact, I don't think it's true.
I don't think he did.
I think Amir Johnson helped Joel Embiid defensively.
I mean, did he?
I think so. There every day. I'm not down in Camden at the practice facility every day. But I would have to think that to some extent, yes, he did.
I mean, did he? Or are we looking for a reason to justify his ridiculous contract?
No, the contract was ridiculous. The second one was absurd. Yeah, or like the first one was absurd. Like,
he wasn't good defensively. He wasn't good, I mean, offensively. He was just a body out there when I watched him. So, like, how did he help Joel Embiid? I'm not saying you're wrong, because I'm with you. I'm not down there every day. I don't talk to people. I don't watch. And in all honesty, 99% of the time when Devon says something, I completely change my opinion. This is honestly one of the only times where me and him disagreed on something basketball related, and I will not change my opinion. But I don't think he added anything. And I think that it's much like when they had Jared Bayless in here, and it was like, oh, he's the veteran presence. I mean,
he provided nothing.
There's different kind, like his veteran presence compared to, I don't know, say a guy like JJ Redick, there's a different veteran presence. Just because you're a veteran doesn't mean you're adding this illustrious, you know, amount of wisdom, and guys are coming to you because you've been able to survive in the league for 15 years. Then there's guys like JJ Redick who have been there, done that, and those are the guys who you're more likely to listen to, in my opinion. But when it comes to guys like Jared Bayless and guys like Amir Johnson, no. Like, I'm not into that. They can kick rocks, because they added literally nothing to this team other than the tag of, I'm a veteran. And even then, I wonder what they honestly added. Their staunch knowledge of the game. I mean, Amir Johnson shouldn't have been playing. He shouldn't have had a contract. He stole money from this team. And yet all I ever hear from people is, well, he's a veteran presence. Great. Give it up for the guy. He was a veteran. He was able to survive in the league for all those years, even though he wasn't a very good player. But I'll tell you right now, if I'm a player, if I'm a younger player, I'm not looking at Amir Johnson for guidance. I'm really not. So looking at getting Al Horford in here, that's a legitimate veteran presence. That's a guy who I go, okay, I'm listening to that guy. I'm listening to Al Horford. Amir Johnson, I mean, yeah, look, I'm giving him the time of day if I'm Joel Embiid. I'm listening to what he has to say. But in the back of my mind, I'm like, yeah, shouldn't you be better? I mean, you're getting paid a lot of money. But Al Horford? No, like that guy, like I'm attached to the hip with Al Horford. And maybe that's the difference with the whole veteran presence argument. Maybe the difference is, one guy I'll listen to if he comes up to me. The other guy I'm seeking out for advice. And I'm following around and I'm watching everything he does. But I you know.
So it's not Amir Johnson hate. It's more Al Horford appreciation.
Oh,
it's glue guy to Al Horford.
Well, I don't like Amir Johnson. I will never hide that. I couldn't stand that guy. I've done shows before with the side topic is like guys on your team that you couldn't stand. Like Amir Johnson immediately comes to mind for me. But yeah, I mean, the appreciation level for, look, it's kind of like the Phillies hitting coach this past year. You'll listen to the advice he gives you, but when Charlie Manuel gets hired, that's different. Charlie Manuel, you're following around. Charlie Manuel, you're soaking up everything he says like a sponge. You're seeking out. Whereas the other guy, yeah, okay, if he walks in the room and gives you some pointers, you're going to listen, you know, because he's a coach. But I don't necessarily think you're walking into the room and being like, hey, let's break down my swing. Let's figure out what I'm doing wrong. And I think that's the difference. Like, Charlie Manuel was to the Phillies what Al Horford should be to the Sixers. And Amir Johnson was to the Sixers what the old hitting coach was to the Phillies. You know, he's there. If he wants to give me some pointers, I'll listen. But no, I'm not actively seeking out what he has to say. I'm sure, and by the way, I've heard Amir Johnson's a great guy, don't get me wrong. But that doesn't stop the fact that the dude stole money from this organization. I can't believe we've gone on like 8 minutes about Amir Johnson. See what happens to him? You just derailed me. You derailed the damn program with your Amir Johnson love.
You're the one that brought him up.
Look, man, one person in this on this show is wearing an Amir Johnson jersey, and it ain't me.
Yeah, it's clearly
it's
me.
It's you. All right.
You're burning them in the streets.
let's go to Dave in Center City. Dave, you're on the Fanatic.
Pat the Bat, Tyler.
What's going on, Dave? How are you?
You guys will hold me over until I get my fix with the A-team tomorrow. But you said something which holds very true about a multitude of teams being 500. When Roger Goodell, and I use that name very loosely, when he was CEO of the NFL and he was stumping to become commissioner, he always said, in a perfect world, I want every franchise to be 8-8. Therefore, leading up to the week or final 2 weeks of the season, everybody's alive for a playoff spot. Everyone's happy. The money's coming in. Well, guess what? The way I've looked at things, gentlemen, we're going to have a plethora of 12-4 teams this year. We're going to have an equal amount of 4-12 or worse. And like you guys said, we might have 12 teams 8-8. But when the smoke clears, there's going to be three franchises that have a legitimate shot to win that Super Bowl.
Yeah.
Andy Reid and the Chiefs, Dougie Pete and the Eagles, and
Bill Belichick.
Belichick and Brady. And what a disgrace. Buffalo did not have an NFL quarterback on the field today.
Oh, you know,
they win that game.
Dave, you're not on the Matt Barkley hype train?
Yeah, remember Barkley?
I'll tell you right now, we were before the game, before the show, we were, me and Tyler in the back, and I saw the hit on Josh Allen, and then we saw who came in, and we literally both started cracking up. Because of the fact, it's like, that's your backup, Matt Barkley? I mean, Matt Barkley is the Amir Johnson of the NFL.
Yeah.
He shouldn't have a job.
But getting back to the Eagles, I can't believe they lost to the Falcons. But guess what? By week 10, we're going to go right back to the way it was 2 years ago with the Eagles not only blowing out teams, but winning the close games.
You know, Dave, and thanks for the phone call, man. I agree with you. Like, I think by week 10, we're sitting here laughing about the fact that people were calling up saying the season was over in week 3.
I don't think we're going to feel comfortable every game. I just simply because of the fact that I don't think this rendition of the team right now is as cohesive as the 2017 team. I think that I said it before the season. I will still stand by it despite the fact that the cornerback play has not been good. I think this team is more talented than the 2017 team.
I agree with that.
So, but the 2017 team had a stretch of games like we talked about earlier, where it was Arizona, Denver, Chicago, San Francisco. It was just bad team after bad team after bad team.
Yeah.
This season is not bad team after bad team after bad team.
No, and you know what? And that's one of the reasons why when they were on that stretch run, I was like, I don't know how good this team actually is. Because of the fact, as you said, if you remember, they're playing a bad team, bad team, bad team. And the year before, they were 7-9, so they get an easier schedule. But you're right. They were playing a bad team, bad team, bad team, bad team. And I'm like, look, I'm loving it. I'm loving the fact that they're dominating teams, don't get me wrong, but I don't know how good they actually are.
I think that the games that they won, there were a couple of games that stood out to show you how good of a team they actually were. Obviously, the LA game, I think, was the best win of the regular season.
Agreed.
After that, I think it was the other LA win, the Chargers game, because it showed us that Doug could make changes. And I think another win that was huge was the win in Dallas on Sunday Night Football, where they were losing at halftime and came back in the second half and just blew the doors off the Cowboys.
You know, and look, I know the team was bad, but the Giants win too is big.
The week three win?
The Jake Elliott. I mean, because keep in mind, you're 1-1 at that point. You had lost to Kansas City. You're at home, but it's a team that you think you should win. You should beat. It's a game you should win. If you remember, Eli Manning, that game looked good. Like, he was picking them apart. And the way they won, you throw a 9-yard out route to Alshon Jeffrey, who literally gets out with 1 second to go to set up the field goal, and then you go on your run. And that was a week after you lose to Kansas City. You didn't run the ball with LeGarrette Blount, a guy who some people had said had been a locker room issue in previous organizations. He walked off the field when he was with Pittsburgh. He was a guy who could have sulked. He didn't. And then you went on your run after that. And I think that was big. Not necessarily a big win in the sense of it was a tough team, but it was just big to not have a losing record, which they could have. And I think that was big. But yeah, no, you're right. The other games were huge. I mean, anytime you beat Dallas is big. We like to crap on Dallas in the city. It's, I mean, a good rivalry. But the reason is they're a good team. They're a pretty good team. So, and that's, I've been saying it all show. I'm looking forward to that Dallas Eagles first matchup in Dallas. It's going to be a barn burner. It's, in my opinion, it's going to be a question of which offense can outduel the other one. You hope it's the Eagles, obviously, unless you're a Cockroach Cowboys fan. But that's going to be a good test for this team. But to Dave's point about parity, you know, I got a buddy of mine, massive hockey fan. I mean, this kid will watch preseason hockey. He'll watch the prospect game in Voorhees. He'll, if it's played on ice, he'll watch it. Loves hockey. Now, he loves football too, but I mean, the NHL, like, he's a poster boy for the league. He says the best week in sports is by far wild card weekend in the NFL. And the reason is because all those teams are so close together, like Dave said, with the parity. And that's what the NFL wants. The NFL wants a week where, like, all those teams, man, you bring all those, quote-unquote, those playoff teams together and see what happens. And he's right. Like, to my buddy's credit, he's got a point. I mean, find a better week in sports than that. It's tough. It's tough to do. All those games on Wild Card Weekend are so much fun. They're usually really, really good games. I mean, hell, look at the Eagles game last year against the Bears with the double doink. It's a great game. Even if you weren't an Eagles fan, even if you were just like a random, you know, Tennessee Titans fan, you were watching. It's a great game. But that's what the NFL wants. They want the parity. So Roger Dell is loving this because not every city is like Philadelphia. You know, there's fans in Tennessee that if they're not in it, they check out. Casual fans. There's fans in Miami. There aren't many fans going to those Miami Dolphins games right now. Not many fans. So there's fans all over the NFL that, hey, if their team's not in it, they're just checked out because they don't have the fan loyalty that we do in this city. So that's why the NFL and Roger Goodell, they love the parity. And I think it's only going to continue. And that's why so many teams are going in this week 5, 2-2, just like the Eagles. 610-632-0975. I'll give you guys an update on the Twitter polls coming up. I'll also update you on the scores of the games. Wild one in L.A., between the Rams and the Bucks right now. I'm going down to the wire, so we'll keep you guys updated on that one. It's Pat Egan. It is Tyler Zuli on 97.5 The Fanatic.
97.5 The Fanatic.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top 5 Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
97.5 The Fanatic.
This is the most ironic songs to come back to on one of my shows because this will never be a song to describe me at all. But we are back. Pat Egan, Tyler Zuli. He's playing hurt. He's in there. And I appreciate him sticking around, producing the program. A wild day of NFL games. And Gardner Minshew, we talked about his comeback. The Jacksonville Jags lead the Denver Broncos in the final 2 minutes of the game, 23-17. Joe Flacco is trying to orchestrate a comeback, but he's going to need a touchdown to do so.
He just did.
Yeah. I
that's unreal.
See that now. Wow. Cortland Sutton, back in the end zone. Did not see that coming, but okay. Well, he's elite now. He's back to being elite. I love Courtland Sutton. I'm a big Courtland Sutton fan. And I think that's his second touchdown of the day, but that is a hell of a drive, man. Really nice drive by Denver. And they jumped out to, I think, a 17-0 or 17-3 lead and let it evaporate. And their offense has been silent since that. But good drive by Joe Flacco for a guy who I was kind of crapping on earlier. But the other games that are going on, another wild game has been the Rams and Bucks game. Now, the Bucks are up 48-40. So hopefully everybody had the over in that one. But minute 42 left, the Rams have the ball, and they have a chance to tie it, which did not look like it was going to be the case for a while there. Because, the Bucks went down to went into L.A. and hammered the defense of the Rams. So then obviously tonight we have the big one, Dallas, New Orleans. Who do you got in that, Tyler?
I've been going back and forth on this one, and I would like to say I think the Saints have a way to win this game. I just don't believe in Teddy Bridgewater. I think that the Cowboys are going to win this game and go to 4-0.
I always like Teddy Bridgewater for whatever reason. I don't think he's better than Dak. But I think he's a good backup, and I think he could start on some teams. Unfortunately for Teddy Bridgewater, the knee injury killed him. I mean, because it was just such a gruesome knee injury that even Minnesota, I mean, because if you remember, he was a decent quarterback for them early in his career.
Yeah, he played really well. I just don't think he was somebody that was able to be mobile and extend plays. And when you mess your knee up like he did, it's really tough to come back.
You know, I was talking earlier about going to Temple games. And but me and my buddy, we've talked a lot about how many pros you can see going to Temple games, like future pros. So we went to go see Temple Louisville like a bunch of years ago. And it was when, you know, he was the quarterback for Louisville. Louisville smoked Temple this game. And he was coming off the field and a bunch of fans were standing behind the tunnel yelling at him like, "This will be your home. Come here. Come play." And my God, was he loving it. He was soaking it in. And obviously, you know, he ends up getting drafted with Eagles pick. But to the Minnesota Vikings, I'll always be thankful for him, though, because he doesn't get injured. You know, Sam Bradford doesn't get traded.
There's no Carson Wentz.
So I'll always be appreciative of him. But let me see what the line is for tonight's Cowboys.
Shouldn't say there's no Carson Wentz. Carson Wentz doesn't play this first season.
The Cowboys are favored by 2.5. So that seems light to me. Now, I know they're playing the Saints in a dome, and that's not an easy place to go down and win. But as we said, you're still playing the backup quarterback, no Drew Brees. We'll see. We'll see what happens. See if the line moves at all. 610-632-0975. We're talking about the Sixers a little earlier, so let me get back to that. I think that they're going to win the Eastern Conference. I think it's just a matter of who they play in the NBA Finals. And my hope is that the Western Conference beats up on each other, a la in 2001. If you remember, the Eastern Conference beat the hell out of each other. You know, the Sixers went into the NBA Finals and everybody was banged up and bruised. The Charles Oakley and the Raptors did it to Allen Iverson in the second round. And then in the Eastern Conference, the Big Dog Robinson and the rest of the Milwaukee Bucks, I mean, they were really going after Allen Iverson to the point where when he finally faced the Lakers, he was banged up, like, in a big way. The whole team was, really. So, looking at it, that's kind of my hope, because I'd be a fool to say that the Sixers have the most talented roster in basketball, but I don't think it's out of the realm of possibility to look and go, okay, they have a legitimate chance. They have a chance, if things break their way, that they could have a parade. Now, I want it on notice, all right, that I have said the same thing about the Phillies and the Eagles. The Phillies I was dead wrong about. All right, I'll eat crow right now. The Phillies I could not have been more wrong about as we sit here waiting for their manager to get
fired. I think a lot of us were. I mean, I had them as a playoff team as well. I thought they would be a wild card team, but I had them as a playoff team.
Yeah, but here's my thing. Like, my biggest problem listening to sports radio is when hosts bang the drum when they're right and they never bring up when they're wrong. So I don't want to be a hypocrite. Hey, mea culpa, I was dead wrong on the Phillies. The Eagles, obviously, the jury's still out, but I think they still have a legitimate chance to win the Super Bowl. A lot of things need to break your way with the Super Bowl, though. A lot of things. Because it's only one game. It's not a series. It's hard to really argue when it's a series. And if you lose that series, it's really tough to argue, hey, you know, we were a better team. Unless it's a game seven, unless it goes that far, you know, maybe you can make the argument with the Sixers-Raptors, if Joel Embiid was healthy, whatever. It's still excuses at the end of the day. But when it's one game, I mean, that's difficult. Because you can drop one game in a series and still obviously win that series. You know, you can. It's not a backbreaker. In football, it's one and done. And as we're learning today, on any given Sunday, any team can win. I say this as the Bucs just put up their 54th point on the Rams on the road. So any team can win on any given Sunday, and that's why winning a Super Bowl is just so damn difficult to do. That's why you really have to give a hat tip to what the New England Patriots have been able to do in their stretch. I don't like the Patriots. I can't stand them. I can't stand Belichick, but you have to respect what they've been able to do and just the excellence that they've had throughout, what, a 15-year run? It's so damn impressive. So looking at the Sixers, yeah, I think it's going to end up being the Bucks-Sixers. I do think, as I said, that the Celtics are going to be much improved. I think they're going to be a better team. I think Kyrie Irving leaving is kind of addition by subtraction. Even though he's one of the top point guards in the league, I think he's kind of a clubhouse cancer, if you will, or a locker room cancer. So I think him leaving will benefit the team. But I still think the Sixers are just a better team than the Celtics. And I think that at the end of the day, defensively, going the defensive route the Sixers did was huge. Now, the catalyst for me isn't necessarily Ben Simmons' jump shot, because I think a lot of people, if you look at, you know, what does this season hinge on, a lot of people will point to the jump shot. For me, it's Josh Richardson, because I just don't know what I'm getting in him. I don't. I'm not going to lie to you, Tyler, and I'm not going to lie to the audience. I was not dialed in on Miami Heat games last year. You know, I didn't sit down with a bowl of popcorn and a Mountain Dew and say, God, I can't wait for the Miami Heat Brooklyn Nets tip off. I wasn't doing it. So I don't know what I'm getting in this kid. I've read good stuff. I've heard good stuff. His progression has been great. You know, I mean, he's trending the right way. Many people think you're getting a younger, cheaper Jimmy Butler. I don't really see that. But if he can continue his career progression like he has, then look out. You just hope that he doesn't, you know, stagnate, and he doesn't improve. The good thing for Josh Richardson is that the coach and Brett Brown, his whole thing was player development, and that's one of the reasons why they hired Brett Brown, was because, hey, we're going to develop some of these younger guys. You're one of the best to do it. Let's hire you. But I'd be lying if I sat here and was able to break down Josh Richardson's game from my own two eyeballs. I haven't been able to do it because I haven't watched him a lot. So he's the big question mark for me. I do think Ben Simmons' jump shot is real. I think it's improved. With that said, we've been fooled by this in the past. I'm not. Markelle Fultz's name come to mind. So we've been fooled by jump shot videos. Don't get it twisted. Those videos were heavily edited too. They were put out by Ben Simmons and his team. Amazingly, they edited out all the misses, and there were, just because it's ridiculous to think that there weren't. So, I've said it before though. For me, it's a big situation of, I don't think he's necessarily to come out and just start jump shot after jump shot after jump shot. If he just adds one or two a game, and if he averages one or two jump shots a game, and just to keep the defense, you know, honest, even if he doesn't make them, it's huge. But I don't necessarily rip him last year, because if he doesn't have confidence in it, and I've said it before, and you look around the court and you've got J.J. Redick and and Jimmy Butler and Joel Embiid and Tobias Harris, and everybody else has a better jump shot than you, and your best asset or your best part of your game is the way you facilitate the ball, I'm not going to rip the guy for not taking jumpers. Would I like to see Ben Simmons be more aggressive? Absolutely, I would. And I do think you're going to get it. But, yeah, I'm not expecting him to come out and just jump shot after jump shot after jump shot this game. If he just adds, as I said, one or two, I'm set. I'm happy. 610-632-0975. I do want to get the expectations for Ben Simmons from Tyler coming up, but we got to hit a break. It is Pat Egan. Final segment to go. 610-632-0975. I hand it off to Rob Motti after that on 97.5 The Fanatic.
97.5 The Fanatic.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.
97.5 The Fanatic.
All right, Gabe Kapler has not been fired yet, that we know of, at least. We'll keep you updated if that happens, obviously. But I did put out the Twitter poll because it's only a matter of time. Who do you want to manage the Phillies next season? Gabe Kapler, Joe Maddon, Dusty Baker, Joe Girardi. And the final results of the Twitter poll, 1,900 votes. Joe Maddon, 48%. Joe Girardi, 38%. Gabe Kapler, 8%. Dusty Baker, 6%. The 8%, what are you thinking? Like, did you watch this season? 8% of you out there would have Gabe Kapler than Dusty Baker? Look, I was a staunch defender of Gabe Kapler for a long time, but when your team drops the ball for the past, 4 months of a season, you underachieve the way you did? Like, your head-scratching moves are fine when you're winning games, but when you don't, I got to call you on the carpet. So I question these people that I'd rather have Gabe Kapler than Dusty Baker, whatever. The resounding winner was Joe Maddon. And then the other Twitter poll was, which position group concerns you the most for the Eagles, the defensive line, the secondary, or the other, which is the right end? The secondary won 85% of the vote, defensive line 13%, and the other, the right end, was 2% of the vote. So, Tyler, congratulations. You won the Twitter poll.
Did I?
Yeah, you said secondary.
Oh, I'm sorry. I thought you were talking about the baseball one. I apologize.
No, you came in second.
Okay.
I came in dead last.
I think that the secondary is the pressing issue.
I came in dead last for the Twitter poll for the manager.
I don't understand Listen, I don't like Dusty Baker at all. I think Dusty Baker is too old at this point. But I'll take anything.
Yeah, I'm kind of with you. Like, at this point, I'll kind of take anything. I need a change. I need a veteran guy. By the way, congrats to we talked a lot of Temple football today. Raquel Armstead, I believe his first touchdown in the NFL. So, local guy from Millville. Congratulations to him. Well, let's go out to the phones, though. Let's go to Josh in Autobahn. Josh, you're on the Fanatic.
What's going on, guys?
How are you?
Really well. I think I finally got up after 7 hours of football on my Sunday. I just want to talk about the landscape of the NFL and how so much has changed my perception of our Eagles in a couple of days. You know, we go into Thursday night 1-2 and we're all down on ourselves. We steal a win. And then just watching what happened today with, you know, the Saints letting the Bucks put up 50 plus on them, you know, the Seahawks are wildly inconsistent. Now, obviously, you know, we have the game tonight. But I'm really feeling a lot better about our birds, especially when we start getting healthier. I still think, you know, we're up there. We're a top 2-3 team at worst in the NFC.
Yeah, I completely agree with you, man. This especially this week has been absolutely bizarre in terms of teams that won, teams that didn't. But when you look at the landscape of the NFC, you couldn't be more right. And, you know, a lot of teams are going to have losses that are bad. A lot of teams are going to have wins that necessarily you don't think they would get. The Eagles are no different. And when the Eagles end up losing to the Lions at home, you might be able to say it's a bad loss. They had a good game against the Chiefs today. But my point is, you look at that game and you go, okay, they lost at home. There's no way they go into Lambeau and win. And that's the game right there that you didn't think they were going to win, and they end up pulling it out. And that's a short week on the road, hostile territory. You're banged up. You're getting some pieces back, but you're still banged up. And they played a great game. And not only that, you're down 10-0 to start the game. You know, and you didn't fold your cards. You didn't go home 1-3, which very well could have happened. But instead, you know, you rally the troops and you get a much needed win and in great fashion. I mean, so I think you're right, man. I think you look at the NFC and it's pretty wide open because the Rams were looking good. And then they get smacked at home by the Bucks, and that's not a very good Bucks team. And the Saints, they're without their quarterback. The Cowboys are good, but how good are they? Because they haven't really faced the top echelon of their schedule yet. So it's kind of wide open, and I wouldn't be shocked if the Eagles just went on a run, really.
We're going to learn a lot about this team in the next couple weeks. You know, we should take care of our business against the Jets. Those three road games, but again, like I was pretty much calling in about the landscape, you know, watching that Vikings team play today. And I mean, given it's on the road and the Bears defense is very, very good, Kirk Cousins is not very good. So, you know, I'm really confident about that game and, you know, we'll see what happens, with, you know, Buffalo and Dallas. But yeah. We're going to learn a lot. But at the quarter pole, you know, four games in, I'm feeling pretty good.
Yeah, Josh, thanks for the phone call, man. I appreciate it. What troubles me about Kirk Cousins is if he has time, he can find his weapons, and he has them. Stephon Diggs is really good. Adam Thielen, I love. Kyle Rudolph's a good tight end.
Dalvin Cook might be the best back in the NFL this year.
Yeah, a really good back out of the backfield, obviously. Guy that a lot of people in Philadelphia wanted. So when he has time, he finds his weapons. When he doesn't have time, he struggles. And what do the Eagles have trouble doing? Getting to the quarterback. And we talked a lot about that this show. If they can do to Kirk Cousins what they did to Aaron Rodgers, I think you're in good shape. Because look, they got one strip sack. It was huge, but it was only one sack. But they constantly had him moving around. They did a very good job of getting the quarterback. I've ripped the defensive line a lot this show, but in that game on Thursday night, they did a good job of making Aaron Rodgers move around. If they can do that to Kirk Cousins, okay, I feel a lot better. But you can't let Kirk Cousins sit back and pick you apart because he will do that. So that and you don't really have the secondary to stick with guys like Stephon Diggs and Adam Thielen and Kyle Rudolph and Dalvin Cook out of the backfield. You don't really have the linebacker to do that. So that worries me. You just hope that the defensive line can kind of build off the good game that they had in Green Bay and continue it. And look, yeah, I'm moving past the Jets. I'm completely looking past the Jets because the Jets win should be a formality. And then, as Josh brought up, man, the next three games after that, it's the Bills, it's Minnesota, it's Dallas, not in that order, but Tyler's all Bills'd up. He's a part of the Bills Mafia. I walked in today, he went through a table. I mean, he's loving the Bills.
Nobody circles the wagons like the Buffalo Bills.
Absolutely. So, you know, you love the Bills, you love their defense. Their defense is legit. Their offense is weak. Let's see what the information we get about Josh Allen and how banged up he is. But we're going to learn a lot about this team. And about how good they are, and about if they are a legitimate team like we thought they were coming into the season, or if they're a good team that's going to make the playoffs and, hey, we're hoping for the best. All right. Look,
but they are who we thought they were.
That you know, that Denny Green cut will never get old. If we did like a pantheon of coaching rant cuts, it's like that. Playoffs is up there.
I'm a man. I'm 40.
Oh, my God. I yell that. I used to yell that at my mom all the time. And she's like, Patrick, you're like 23.
I found myself speaking in drops the other day.
Oh, I do that all the time.
And people are like, dude, what are you saying?
I've worked here for, I don't know, 8 years or so. Yeah, I mean, by year two, I was speaking in drops. And no one ever knows. What I constantly say to people, caller has a point. Like, just in general conversation. And they never know what I'm talking about. So I'm with you on that. Great cut by Denny Green, though. Not a very good coach, but he was a lasting memory. Coming up next is Rob Motti. Tyler, thank you so much for sticking around and producing. And don't forget, tomorrow, Donna McNabb joins the morning show at 9:30. So you'll definitely want to hear Five's analysis on what happened in Green Bay this past Thursday and look on to the Jets. But I appreciate everybody for tuning in, for tweeting, and for listening, and obviously for Julie coming in hurt and sticking around. But make sure to tune in and keep it here for Rob Motti coming up on 97.5 The Fanatic.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.